This is Husker Online, your authority on Nebraska athletics. In this weekly show, the Husker Online team will give you the latest insight on Husker football, basketball, baseball, and of course, recruiting. Now, here's your host, Husker Online publisher, Sean Callahan.
Hello there and welcome to another edition of the Husker Online Show. Sean Callahan, Steve Sipple, Robin Washett. Week two is upon us as we will get you ready for Saturday's game against Bowling Green, a night game, a drone show, which, by the way, will follow the game. It will not be like, you know, it's a big, longer show, so it's going to be after the game's over with.
Oh, we're not waiting until after the drone show?
No. I mean, I think...
you don't want to watch the drone
show. Well, the fear of, like, if you're a media person trying to work, like, what if the players and the coaches all want to stay out there for the drone show?
Oh gosh. Ooh. Let's hope not. Hopefully Keith gets him. Keeps him rolling.
I'm not going to comment on that. You might be right.
But no, the America 250 drone show, which I actually saw at the College World Series, and they had the America 250 drone. I'm assuming it's the same or similar.
Was it remarkable?
But we're brought to you, by the way, by Sauter Heyman Jewelers. We'll tell you more about them here in the show. But yeah, it's remarkable. And I do want to say this too. I know we're getting ready for Bowling Green, but it was remarkable to be in Chicago this weekend on Sunday for the Nebraska volleyball. I went into it expecting a good number of people there. I was not expecting like the largest crowd at Wrigley Field, like since Jackie Robinson played there. I was not expecting.
They ran out of food?
So we went up to like the concession stand and they're like, we're out of pretzels. We're out of popcorn. I mean, they couldn't keep up with the amount of people because you had 43,000 people there. And everybody was eating. And
they saw a dance-off.
And it was, yeah, I joked. It kind of turned into a Savannah Bananas deal.
Yeah.
You feel really bad for all the people that put the work in, the fans, to get out to this thing. But as Terry Pettit, the legendary retired Nebraska volleyball coach, said, literally a marine layer of fog.
Marine layer.
Moved over.
Oh, was it? It was very visible from your vantage point.
Well, you're a mile away from essentially an ocean.
Yeah, it's almost like it's Chicago in the summertime.
I'm just going to bite my tongue on all of this.
The humidity,
but it was fun.
Yeah, it was Chicago. It was great to see just so many people out there. And I mean, I think everybody was blown away. You just wonder, you know, if they would have moved this to, like, say, Milwaukee and you played it in a domed Brewers stadium, could that have worked? With Wisconsin and Nebraska involved.
Not quite the same as Wrigley.
The Wrigley, yeah.
The Milwaukee Dome.
Trying to think of the best domed baseball stadium that would have some sort of charm.
But yeah, you've got to have one that will draw Big Ten fans and the Big Ten footprint.
Oh, I see.
That's Milwaukee. What I'm saying.
Milwaukee.
And you could have Nebraska and Wisconsin play in the Brewers Stadium, like with a doubleheader, and that might have worked. Now, but Milwaukee's not Chicago, as you know. It's a little bit different.
It's not Wrigley.
That was a bummer, but again, Nebraska fans continue to show why they are the program's number one asset.
100%.
But let's talk ball. As
kind of wanted to get into the hot dogs, but that we can go there.
You want to talk hot dogs?
Well, you had a couple, right?
No, some guy that you're fascinated with took a picture of me. With my seventh grade daughter buying food for my family.
Who's that? I don't know who it is. Who are we talking about?
Not was it that Joel Schaefer, one of those?
No, Bruce.
Bruce. Yeah,
oh,
Bruce
the guy Clause? That does the imitations of you.
Oh, yeah, Bruce. Yeah. You engaged in this tweet. You said you don't know who he is?
I don't know who he is.
I was literally in this concession stand line buying a hot dog for my family, and some guy snipped a picture of me. There it is right there.
Let me see.
You had a couple.
It's a good picture. It's a good picture, Sean.
Didn't even say hi to me. At least say hi to me if you're taking my picture.
Yeah, just sniping.
Clausen is a good fan of ours. Now I know who you're talking about. I don't pay that close attention to who I'm engaging with.
And
on
that's
Twitter.
My seventh grade daughter, to my right.
Yeah.
Just so everyone knows. Like,
you're probably going to get sniped in public. Happens all the time.
It's part of the deal.
Yeah.
But let's get into this week because we're going to talk, obviously, more specific offense, defensive storylines going into the game against Bowling Green. But just kind of broad brush takeaways. I mean, there definitely was a lot to like from week one. There were some concerns from week one, the penalties, maybe a couple special teams things, the start on defense, the pass rushing. But you really had to like the running game, what Calandria brought. I think the receivers tight end Luke Lindenmeyer. I mean, there were a lot of things, good, bad, you know, that you can build on from this week one.
I thought the running backs maybe lead that list. That's a strong, it's funny to say it. Now, I'm going to say it's a strong room, but we got to see what that looks like in the Big Ten. Mm-hmm. I've gotten a lot of that from the old heads that I know. Like, don't be careful with this whole running back discussion. You got to see how that looks in the Big Ten. But Jamal Rule, certainly, I mean, I think he captures your imagination the way he runs. That heavy set was powerful when they brought in Joshir Whittington and Anthony Jones and moved Pritchett over. I think they had Lindenmeyer over there, too. That's a power move. I think there was a lot to like in that game.
Yeah, I mean, I think looking back, it was hard to know how to feel about that game because the game couldn't have started any worse, but then it couldn't have ended much better with
good
the way
point.
That Nebraska slammed the door
yeah.
and did what it was supposed to do, especially late in the game when you know they were supposed to take over and dominate. Well, they took over and dominated, even though it was a lot slower than you know some might have expected. In the end, Nebraska did what it was supposed to do.
Yep.
So I think you know the sentiment seems internally that Nebraska's they're not okay with it, but like they can see some benefit to having such a choppy start to that game because right out of the gate, first play, you're facing adversity. Now how are you going to respond? That's what every coach, especially in these types of games, they want to see with a new group, a bunch of new players, new coaches. How is your team going to respond when things aren't going great? When you're under the spotlight and fans are starting to wring their hands a little bit, like how are you going to bounce back from things that don't go your way? And clearly Nebraska bounced back eventually as well as you could hope.
And we saw them play a lot of defensive linemen. I mean, I think when you look at their defensive snap chart, a couple of those D linemen played a lot of snaps, but they really are trying to find something on that bench, like develop somebody. Jeremiah Jones got a lot of reps. David Hufkin took a lot of reps. Tyson Terry. That was one of my takeaways with that defense. Like the way they subbed, they weren't just trying to play their starters the whole game. They wanted to develop guys, and they're going to probably have to do that again this week and maybe against North Dakota.
18 defensive linemen, 11 played 9 or more snaps.
Jeremiah Jones played 15. He was in on the second series, actually made a play. David Hufkin had 11 plays. Tyson Terry, 10. Jordan Ochoa, 9. Those were the – I mean, there was a bunch of guys off the bench.
Mac Markway got 6 snaps.
Mm-hmm. Mac Markway. I stopped at Sualefatu. He had 5. Then some guys had fewer than 5. But, yeah, they played a lot of guys. And, by the way, Anthony Jones played 52 snaps. Anthony Jones, 52, which is 20 more than anybody else.
Yeah, Owen Stoudemire was next at 32.
Yes.
Yeah, the one that's kind of surprised me is Cade Pedshock, like 17. There was a point where I felt like he was like a starter. And, it just changes scheme. I mean, and I'm sure his snaps will vary week to week.
He's a good guy to have coming off the bench.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jeremiah Jones as well. Tyson Terry getting his first true collegiate snaps. Jasir Whittington, he didn't necessarily score high on Pro Football Focus, but, they're going to ride that guy. They put him on the edge on pass rushing, even.
Orich said that Whittington, he listed 4 or 5 guys that played well. Whittington was one of them. Mm-hmm. Andrew Marshall, he said, was the best player on the field.
Yeah.
Andrew Marshall, the corner. He also mentioned Jameer Khan and Anthony Jones and Vincent Shavers. Vincent Shavers, as you wrote, Robin, scored his best grade on PFF since last year's Michigan game. Shavers took over at Will linebacker. That's where Chambliss plays.
Mm-hmm.
Chambliss is hurt. We don't know if we're going to see Owen Chambliss this week or not.
All right. When we come back, let's get into the offense. Let's talk the running backs. Let's talk Anthony Calandria and more. You're listening here to the Husker Online Show.
You're listening to the Husker Online Show, your authority on Nebraska athletics.
And we're back here on the Husker Online Show. Sean Callahan, Steve Sippel, Robin Washett. This segment of the Husker Online Show brought to you by our presenting sponsor, Sauter Heyman. Some jewelry is bought for special occasions. The best pieces become part of the family story. At Sauter Heyman Jewelers, today's fine jewelry can become tomorrow's family heirloom. Whether you're shopping for an anniversary, birthday, engagement, or just something special, their team can help you find a piece that will be loved for years to come. Use the code Husker online and you'll get 10% off your purchase when only the best will do. Sauter Heyman Jewelers, Lincoln, Grand Island, and worldwide at SauterHeyman.com. Thanks again to our presenting sponsor of the show, Sauter Heyman Jewelers. All right, let's get into the offensive storylines. I'm curious, with Anthony Calandria in his first start, was it about what you expected, or were there some moments that were maybe even better than you expected with his ability to kind of throw off his back foot or his ability to kind of keep plays alive, some of the things that we saw that really kind of turned the game for Nebraska?
As you noted, one of you guys, 5 of his 7 rushing attempts converted first downs. I repeat, 5 of his 7 rushing attempts converted first downs. That's gigantic. That's something, you know, Nebraska didn't have. 6 for 8 for 78 yards on third down throws. That's good. Those are good things. I thought he ran the operation well. Dana didn't like his completion percentage, which was 56.2%. Yeah, how many drops did they have?
3, right?
They scored three, and then some of them weren't scored drops because the ball was thrown too hard.
Are you saying 3 to 5 drops?
Well, 3 by the PFF standard, but there were probably like 5 total.
That gets you up over 60 then.
And, you know, 2 of them, they said maybe the quarterback didn't put it in a good place. I think it was coming in too hard. He was rifling the ball.
I like his poise. That's what I like. I always say this. This is the 10th time I've said it, but I might as well say it again. I would go this route all the time. Go to the portal and get a veteran. I mean, you don't start a freshman in this league. Michigan's finding out a little bit about that right now. Nebraska found out. I'm sure you're going to find somebody who's done well. I think you got to look pretty hard.
Like Trevor Lawrence would be like a rare Trevor Lawrence, occasion.
Yeah, and he didn't play in the Big Ten, right?
No.
Not in this day and age. So I thought his veteran presence was very – it's hard to describe, but he never got flustered. Mm-hmm. He didn't do anything crazy. His decision-making was good. No turnover-worthy plays.
He had the fumbled snap.
Yeah, that was like an exchange.
But, like, who was that on? I don't know.
So the turnover-worthy plays, yeah, like, are his passes. He had no turnover.
Yeah, not snap.
He didn't have any, like, passes that were turnover-worthy where he threw it somewhere where he shouldn't have thrown it.
Yeah. You know, that handoff situation was with Mekhi. It's so hard for us to tell who was at fault there.
Who went the wrong way? We don't know.
Dana indicated that was on Calandria.
Okay. And he also said Calandria was to blame on the intentional grounding penalty, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, looking back, you know, your initial impressions, I thought overall, yeah, you can pick apart some mistakes here and there. But overall, I mean, he was the steadying force, especially early on when things were a little volatile for Nebraska. And I think his ability to create something out of nothing was a big reason why that offense got going. Not just as a runner and converting first down with his legs, but extending plays, buying time in the pocket for receivers to kind of get open on scramble drills. And, I mean, that's what I expected to see out of him, was just kind of that playmaking, where if something's not there, you're not taking a sack or you're not forcing it to your first or second read, which we've seen a lot of over the years. So, like, I thought that part of it was encouraging because I wanted to see that. I was also a bit surprised at just the lack of volume as a true rusher. We talked about this after the game, but just the very few designed runs early. You saw more of them in the second half, and maybe that was part of the game plan. But that was good because I didn't want to see them put too much on him as a runner, because I was worried about the injury risk with his frame and his unwillingness in his career to slide. I thought they did a good job of – and he did a good job of picking his spots to run rather than just try to run him into the ground.
Yeah, to use a golf analogy with Calandria, you know, he's good off the fairway and on the fairway. He's able to kind of take shots in the rough or get around, where previously in the offense, everything had to kind of be played within the fairway. Like, mm-hmm. they weren't able to really do a whole lot out of the pocket, on the run. It just didn't work. Calandria, though, as you mentioned, he had eight pass plays of 15 plus yards in the game. Eight. And, you know, they completed just four passes that traveled 10 plus yards. But to kind of put some context in that, TJ Lateef only had six balls that he completed over the final three games of the season last year. So Calandria is going to, you know.
Oh, come on. I mean, he played well. His PFF score is 84.3.
Which is as good as you'll see from a Nebraska quarterback. I mean,
that's with a 56% completion percentage. Right. Like, that shows you how well he was playing.
Yeah. Again, my biggest takeaway was how controlled he was. Mm-hmm. I mean, he played like a veteran player.
He didn't force
that's what he
it.
Is. That's, no, he didn't force
as
much.
A runner, he didn't put the ball in danger by trying to do too much with his arm. He picked his spots. He found the checkdowns, and if the play wasn't there, he made the most out of it. He didn't try to do too much. That was encouraging.
He looked like he was a well-coached quarterback to me.
The running back snaps were 31 for Jamal Rule, 28 for Mekhi Nelson, 14 for Mosey, 1 for Quentin Ives. You just wonder what that picture will look like. Do you just keep feeding the hot hand Rule, or do you have a different approach this week and just kind of let things play out?
Forget what I think. We asked Holgorsen that today, and he views them all three as starters. It'll be determined by play who gets the rock and who is rolling. So to answer your question, you got to wait, I think.
And to me, the starting thing doesn't really matter, because when I look at the snap counts, Jamal Rule, 31 snaps. Mekhi Nelson, 28. Mosey, 14. That's a pretty clear pecking order, in my opinion, at least as far as who the third man is in that three-man committee. Now it's just a matter of, I think, on a given day, given opponent, given circumstance, who's going to take the lion's share of the workload between Rule and Nelson.
All three look good.
31 carries for the trio for 217 yards.
They all three look good.
Like, if there was a prop bet number for their total, like, it would have not been anywhere close to that. I mean, I'm guessing a prop number would have been like 140.
Yeah.
You know, they more than overmet the expectation. At the receiver position, guys, really only four guys took significant stance. Kwazi Gilmore, Ja'Cory Barney, and Isaiah Hunter, and then Quinn Clark kind of split reps with Hunter. But Gilmore almost played every snap. I mean, he was out there the whole
10 game. Targets. He was targeted 10 times. Barney was targeted 8 times. And Isaiah Hunter was only targeted once. And Dana Holgorsen said today that can't happen. He's got to be. He said in plain terms that he's got to be targeted more than once. That was eye popping. Isaiah
Hunter.
He's
explosive.
Oh yeah, you saw it.
You saw when he got the ball in his hands, he just housed it for a touchdown.
God dang, he gets to. He goes 0-70 super fast.
He's
probably
their best home run hitter in that
Maryland game.
Yeah.
I mean, that play,
several instances.
They tracked his
Michigan
speed
State
in the Maryland game on that play, and he was the fastest player that week in college football on on-field play.
One target. Now, we talked all off-season, not all off-season, but all summer about Calandria establishing immediate chemistry with Kwazi Gilmore. Boy, you saw that. Mm-hmm. I mean, that
especially
was
early when the pressure was immediately on. He was looking to Kwazi.
Yeah, those guys that we know that watch practice – they were saying that they have serious chemistry. Mm-hmm. That won't go away, but they got to get Gilmore more involved. And Ja'Cory looks like he's improved. Ja'Cory, I don't know how to describe it. He just looks a little more stable when he runs the ball than me.
He's finishing through tackles.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
How many times before he'd get the ball in the flat and then go down on first contact? He would run in through contact a little bit. That's an element that he needed to have in his game. You know who else they want to get the ball more to? Luke Lindenmeyer.
Mm.
And how about him? Two catches on two targets, regarded as the best performance Dana Holgorsen
and
maybe
Matt.
Even Matt Rule had ever been a part of for a tight end.
16 knockdown blocks?
Yeah, it depends on who you ask.
Or 18 knockdown blocks.
Ron Brown said 18, and Rule was very clear that it's Ron
Brown. Blocks is ridiculous.
Yes. Yes. And so that's another guy they want to get more involved, because, I mean, he only had two catches, but I'm pretty sure both of them converted first downs, and just the. You know, he just showed that he was a very steady presence for them that I would expect to see a lot more volume his way going forward.
God, football's back, Sean.
Luke Lindenmeyer graded an 81.7 as a run blocker, which as for a non-O lineman, that's as high as you'll see.
He's like the sixth O lineman. He is. Now, they always, you know, those guys that I talked to, split zone, they said he whips around on that split zone and is a terror. Mm. Like, he's gonna hospitalize somebody. He really gets after it.
All right, when we come back, let's talk defense and what we learned from Rob Orch's crew in week one as they get ready for Bowling Green. You're listening here to the Husker Online Show.
You're listening to the Husker Online Show, your authority on Nebraska athletics.
Back here on the Husker Online Show, Sean Callahan, Steve Sipple, Robin Washett, as we talk defensive storylines. But before we do that, we're brought to you by Cranium. And, you know, guys, you've been able to get Cranium at Mega Saver and Hy-Vee's all across Nebraska, U-Stops, but now also at Sat Brothers. You can get Cranium at Sat Brothers as well. And they just dropped the new flavor, Strawberries and Cream, which is wildly popular. It just came out in September. Urge you to get some of that. I was in Hy-Vee, and I kind of like to do a Cranium scouting report just to look at it. And, okay. And people are buying it. Like, you go on the energy drink aisle, and
you watching it?
And a lot of the other ones aren't being bought. Like, the Cranium one, you have to, like, reach in there and grab. I mean, people are buying it, and that's what we want to hear. So,
do you encourage people when you're there?
I don't.
Get some Cranium.
But I like to see what, you know, see how it's doing. Yeah. Give it a look. I was in there last night.
Interesting.
You can buy it in two spots in our Hy-Vee. They have it in the health area, kind of in like a trophy case up front.
Yep.
And then the regular energy drink aisle as well.
Okay.
But founded by two lifelong Nebraskans, it's naturally sourced caffeine, sugar-free, gives you that mental clarity, and it's all, you know, the caffeine's not too much, 150 milligrams, which is like a Starbucks cup of coffee. It's not gonna get you twitchy all day, which for us, that's good with Sipple. We don't need him.
I'm already pretty twitchy, but
I don't need a twitchy Sipple.
I mean, it really helps these shows. I'm not, we kind of joke about, but I'm not joking. It helps these shows.
Go to
it helps Robin for sure.
Yeah, Robin's on number two today.
Robin's always slamming him. He carries him in his pocket.
So I brought one to the press conference today, and then I get in my car, and there's like still like a half empty one in my cup holder. So I was like, well, I'll just finish this one first, and then I cracked the second one. So I'm one and a half deep right now.
Warm Cranium.
Elite energy on the show today, but go to drinkcranium.com, use the promo code Husker Online. You'll get 10% off if you can't get in the store. That will give you free shipping as well. But let's get into defense. Not the start Rob Orch wanted, clearly, with that opening play of the game. Simple coverage bust. The corner, Jeremiah Charles, thought they were in zone, and it was man. And there was
68 yards later,
a miscommunication play that, you know, it almost felt like Nebraska was playing from behind or on their heels for the better part of three quarters.
Yep, for sure. For sure half. It's really sort of stunning to watch the play and what just the player freezes. And you don't see it in real time. If you see it in real time, you're really an astute football person. I didn't see it in real time. It was just obviously a bust. But, God, yeah, Rob Orch in his first game as Nebraska's defensive coordinator. That's the way it starts.
Play one.
And today, Tuesday, he could joke about it. He ended his press conference by saying, we'll try not to allow a 70-yard play on the first play, guys. You can joke about it now. At the moment, though, it's no joke.
Yeah, it was tense there because it was like, oh, no. Here we go. And then they go give up two more straight scoring drives right after that. And you're like, what's happening here? Like, this is going to be a long year. But to their credit, just like the offense kind of found its footing, the defense really locked in the second half and really took control of that game. I know Ohio missed that field goal early in the third quarter, but other than that, they didn't really come close to being putting together a real scoring threat. And, you know, that's, again, kind of going back to the conversation of, you know, how are you going to respond when things aren't going right? Well, things didn't go right on the very first snap of the game. And the defense, it took longer than I'm sure many hope, but they eventually figured it out, and they eventually took the game over, and they eventually dominated to a 28-point win.
Well, and the QB run game was an issue. I mean, that was kind of really all Ohio had going for them. Just Nebraska couldn't get to the quarterback consistently, and when they did, he got around it or was able to outrun it. But I got news for you. Every team has that problem. Like, Georgia has problems with dual
100%.
Nebraska's not the only school in the country.
No, Nick Saban's Alabama had trouble with.
Oh, God, yes, Sean. You make a great point. That's just a hard thing. It's a hard thing to deal with. I didn't expect Poulos I'm not going
to
say.
To look like Josh Allen.
Yeah. I mean, I was just wrong. I don't know if I said it on our show. I thought he was more stationary, but quickly in that game, you're like, okay, he's not stationary. Mm-hmm. He's 6'6", 243.
Tough.
So, yeah, think Heinrich Harburg. And, he could get up the field. Sean, you're exactly right. It's hard. Now, Nebraska, the way they played was they weren't going after sacks. They talk about condensing the pocket, crushing the pocket, putting colors in his face, you know, trashing it up the pocket. They just didn't execute very well. You notice, too, what they were doing was interesting. They're kind of using Whittington and Jones at alternate times as a spy. Whittington would take two steps in, then stop. And that was his assignment. And they were also doing that with Anthony Jones. So I don't know if spy is the right word, but that's kind of what they're doing.
QB contain?
Yeah, kind of act like you're going to rush, stop, and stay at the line of scrimmage.
Remember Bo would always get annoyed when media would ask him about a spy?
Sean, coaches have different schools of thought on the spy. It's used. People use spies. I used to think they don't, but they do. Mm-hmm. Bo hated it, but other coaches like it. The reason they don't like it, some coaches, is because essentially now you're making guys play two gaps. You know, I mean, it puts strain on the other guys is what I'm talking about.
How much do you think some of those pocket breakdowns that allowed those QB runs, especially the scrambles, had to do with no Owen Chambliss? And then just the pre-snap alignment and preparation and identification.
It's hard to say because we haven't seen Owen Chambliss play for Nebraska.
But hear Rob Orsch on Tuesday said that there's not a player on defense that can do everything that Owen Chambliss does from a mental and communication standpoint.
Yeah, and I think we'll learn like the next 2 weeks if he's available because you know they're going to see a dual threat quarterback in Bowling Green, yep. And arguably North Dakota will have the best quarterback of the three teams they'll play.
Is he mobile? Do you know?
Yeah, and so they've got a guy that can move and cause problems. And they have a veteran offensive line with 7 of their 8 top linemen returning from a year ago. So that game will be a challenge for the defense.
Chambliss did not suit up Saturday. Matt Rule. He said he doesn't know if he'll play Saturday. Shavers was, Chambliss is actually their Will linebacker, not their Mike. So Shavers was pressed into that Will duty. Orich didn't lavish praise on Shavers, even though Shavers, his grade, as I mentioned earlier, was the highest grade he's had, the best he's played since last year's Michigan game. Orich was kind of reserved in his praise of Shavers, but I don't know. Shavers.
Dexter Foster didn't play necessarily his best game.
Didn't score particularly well by PFF, mm-hmm. although Merritt did. And did Shavers. I have him right here, Sean. Mm-hmm. Shavers scored 76.7. That was his grade. And Merritt, 70.7. Dexter Foster, 50.4. By the way, after
that, 29.4 tackling grade.
Yeah. That's surprising.
That's a problem.
By the way, 52 snaps Foster, 50 Shavers, 23 Merritt. Then it drops down to 3 for Pierce Mooberry and 3 for Derek Wacker. It's those three guys. It's those three guys without Chambliss.
What you want to see, Robin, this week now are more of this, the traditional quick three now, where you come in, 3 plays, get your work, get the offense back out there. We didn't see enough of that, in my opinion. We got to see it as the game went late.
Yeah.
But early on, third downs were tough. Early rundowns were tough.
They were 6 of 15 on third down.
I wonder how much of it was them just being a little shell-shocked and not playing as fast as maybe they would if they hadn't given up 68 yards on a bust on the very first play. Like, I just wonder how much that kind of took some air out of them. Because eventually, once they, settled down, they started playing the way that you would expect them to play. But I wonder just how much that start impacted the confidence to go out and see ball, go get ball. Because that's kind of what Orch talked about. He's like, they weren't playing fast enough.
No, that's not kind of what he talked about. He talked about it. He said, we didn't read our keys and get to the ball fast enough. He's definitely looking for them to play faster.
Mm-hmm. I want to see it right out of the gate. Obviously, under 68 yards on the first play would help.
You could see it, Sean, from your naked eye. They weren't playing fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
All right. See it.
Abby Barmer will join us. She's back from Chicago. We'll get her full report from Wrigley Field as well as the mailbag. You're listening here to the Husker Online Show.
This is Husker Online, your authority on Nebraska athletics.
And we're back here on the Husker Online Show. Sean Callahan, Steve Sipple, Robin Washett, Abby Barmore joining us for the mailbag. But before we get to that, this segment of the show brought to you by Game Time. Look, you're looking to buy tickets for this weekend's game. Could be football. Could be volleyball. There is no better place to go than Game Time. And we just recently bought the Ella Langley tickets on Game Time's app. And the tickets I found in the lower bowl were significantly cheaper on Game Time than anywhere else I found.
PBA?
We got lower bowl seats for this concert for $250 apiece. And I would say, Abby, that's a pretty good price.
Yeah, that's actually a really good price. Trust me, I've had my eye on these tickets. But yeah, that is a really good price, actually. The lowest I've seen is like $350, maybe.
So we got tickets for $250-ish a piece.
So Game Time's just not for sporting events?
Everything.
Everything.
And then the best thing is the fees are added in, so you know it highlights what the good prices are, so you know what those are. And it tells you what your seat looks like when you get on there. So you're like, all right, this is what my view is going to be. It gives you all that all in one app. All right, well, take the guesswork out of buying tickets to every type of event with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, use the code ON3 for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code ON3, O-N-3, for $20 off. Download the Game Time app today. Abby, before we get into the mailbag, you are back from Wrigley. I know you got back on Monday as well. First of all, is there any chance at all this Missouri match could happen? And secondly, how was your experience?
Yeah, so I think they're going to try to look at this Missouri match. There's a couple of dates that make sense. I think there's a later weekend in September maybe where they have like three games neither team is playing. Or they could do something like play on November 28th, which would be like after the Big Ten tournament. I don't know if like the teams are going to be interested in that. They have played in those days before. That's the Saturday of Thanksgiving. But we'll just kind of see how they sort it out. And also it's like, what's the draw of trying to play a team? And maybe for Nebraska, if, you know, Missouri's RPI goes up, maybe they'll be more interested. But we'll just have to see. And traveling wise, I think that there is, you know, a possibility, but I wouldn't bet all your money on it. And yeah, I had a great time. It was like super chaotic, even like getting there. My flight was delayed 6 hours and I showed up to the first match at DePaul like right at 5 o'clock when it started. So that was a bummer. But those like 12 minutes of volleyball when Nebraska was playing in Wrigley was like so cool. I love that part of it. But then, you know, the chaos of like, oh, wow, literally how many towels do they have? I mean, who?
An impressive amount of towels.
No matter who you are, you're wiping down the court. Jalen Reyes is ripping off logos. So that was so I had never seen anything like that. And right in the press box, we're all just like trying to figure out what's going on. Luckily, I had someone watching TV that was texting me updates, you know.
They had leaf blowers too.
It's crazy. Oh yeah, they had a ton of towels. They had big old fans. They had leaf blowers. They ripped up the court, like the logos on the court. Which, if I'm Allstate, I'm thinking, wow, I paid to put two logos on this court, and they're getting ripped up on national television on Fox. So it was totally chaotic, but also, I don't know, I think both teams kind of, you know, took it in stride, and they still found a way to have fun and entertain the crowd. And, yeah, it was a good showing of just, you know, how much fun that you can have even if you're not playing volleyball.
Yeah, they kind of kept things alive. It had to go from being a volleyball match to basically a Savannah Bananas game pretty quickly.
Yeah, they were singing, and we had an impromptu dance-off, which was incredible and did not surprise me of Ryan Hunter. The players always talk about she's probably the funniest person on the team. So, of course, it was Ryan.
All right, well, let's get into the mailbag, Abby. Where are we starting off?
Okay, first one. What is the biggest area of improvement that Nebraska needs to make from game one to game two?
I think just the defensive operation.
In what regard?
Just quick three and outs, pass rush, just the overall operation and feel and flow of the defense.
I think it's I think to piggyback off what Sean said.
Good job.
You got to that rush lane discipline that Rob Arch talked about today. That has to improve. That's not a talent issue. That's a execution issue. And he said they're focusing a lot on that this week.
I want to see some cleaner special teams.
Oh, hello.
No more offsides on kickoffs. That punt that nearly got blocked in the end zone, that can't happen. They got lucky on that one. The return where you get it out to the 20 and then end up on your 9, they can't have that. Like, I want to see just cleaner overall execution on special teams.
All right, Abby, what's next?
Which play against Ohio stood out to you the most?
I thought the back foot throw when they were backed on the 8-yard line and he's in the end zone, Anthony Calandria, to Kwasi Gilmer. I mean, very few quarterbacks that have played at Nebraska could have made that throw. And it wasn't like, you know, he's going backwards and it wasn't a bad throw. I mean, the ball still had zip on it and it was located only in a place the receiver could get it. And so that one to me kind of sparked the offense for the rest of the game.
Play of the game, per Matt Rule. I agree. I mean, that play changed the game, and that goes back to our offensive conversation about what Calandria brings this offense, is those type of plays where it's just a guy out there creating a play out of nothing and really changing the course of momentum.
I thought the play that made the biggest impression on me, I was watching it over on TikTok, was they went to that heavy set, not down near the goal line. It was more closer to midfield.
Fourth and 3 or fourth and 2.
Yeah, and that was an incredible show of power that told me a lot about a lot of things. It made me feel better about the entire world.
The O-line, the big package, and Rule.
Yeah. So, Jamal. They had Whittington, Anthony Jones. I think, they moved Pritchard over, and they just hammer Rule over that side, and he got, like, 12. It just looked beautiful. I mean, if you watch – I watched it over and over. That is – if I'm Rule, I feel very proud about my program when I watch that play.
People like Sean's analogy, where it's like, you know, you're in the rich guy in the driveway, pulls all his cars in the driveway and say,
"You don't got cars like this."
No, and they're not like sports cars. They're like Jeeps and Hummers and like big Dualies, and man, that was a show of force. It was beautiful.
Let's line up as many 500,000 to $1 million players on the line of scrimmage. Mm-hmm. And just see what the MAC can do against it.
Good luck, Ohio.
Now, Michigan tried doing that, to be fair, to Western Michigan, who won the MAC last year, and they didn't do anything.
No, I'm giving Nebraska a lot of credit here. I mean, and it wasn't just the fact that they have high-priced players. Those guys have to perform in that situation. They did. And it's beautiful watching 25 rip through there, too. Because he's a physical runner.
Final question.
What is the most chaotic game that you've covered in your career?
Well, I think we have to start with the 2018 Akron game just because what it meant, you know, when you compare it to the volleyball match that you dealt with, Abby. And, you know, I was watching that Florida State game last night or on Monday night against SMU, and it made me think of the Akron. Like, they were talking about them staying the night and playing tomorrow.
Yeah.
And you knew that there's no way that can happen, because I can remember when Akron was here, they were going to have to put Akron in a dorm building. Nebraska staff was going to Walmart and Target to buy
pillows,
all the sheets, all the pillows. And that's just not ideal. And then you got to, because there's no hotel beds. Like, all the hotels are rebooked when you leave as a team. It's not like they hope that you come back.
Put them in a dorm with a bunch of pillows and blankets that were purchased from Walmart, et cetera. It's ridiculous.
On twin beds in Selicol.
Yeah, and there's a lot of confusion because we've never dealt with it like that, anything. It was hard. You didn't really know how to cover it, you know?
And never happened before.
Right.
But the COVID year, guys, too. I mean, the one that sticks out to me is Rutgers.
It sticks out because it was sort of eerie. And it's just,
Friday night, the week before Christmas.
Okay, Friday night, the week before Christmas, it's really cold. It's pretty cold out.
There's snow all over the ground.
Yeah, it's cold. And there's nobody in the stadium except in the suites, right? There's some people in the suites, but the stadium's vacant.
They didn't allow Nebraska's parents to go.
Didn't allow the parents to go. We're in the press box, and it's colder than hell, and they're keeping the door open, I guess, to minimize the damage the virus is allegedly doing. And – Sean kept getting up and shutting the door, which I appreciated greatly because it was freezing in there.
Well, I was kind of using a common sense approach. I'm like, why is someone leaving the door open? Like,
it didn't make any sense.
And then somebody just kept opening it.
Right.
And I think I got up and closed it 8 times.
Yeah. It was wild.
We had a little standoff.
Yeah. And remember, you had to go down and get your Jimmy John's sandwich at some designated spot, you know, like give him a code word. It was creepy. It's creepy.
Yeah. They had high level glass between our seats in the press box. So it was like we watched the game in a voting booth.
Better time.
Better times.
So I didn't get to travel into the COVID year because we were limited to how many people you could get credentialed for road games. But I did do the basketball season and
oh god,
an empty PBA with a bunch of cardboard cutouts and like
cardboard cutouts.
The audio loop of crowd noise that like you could start to pick up like when it was going to flip over again.
They played Christmas Day, right?
Yes. And so the Michigan game on Christmas Day was one of the saddest games I've covered in my career. Well, because it was a terrible game. Michigan boat raced Nebraska in that one. And it was just like you're sitting there on Christmas with an empty arena watching a really bad game. I was sitting there with Chris Bassnett, your former colleague. And you're just like, well, here we are. The other one, Sean, were you guys there at the 2002 Texas A&M game?
Oh,
football.
Yeah.
When I think about chaos, the first thing that comes to my mind is the cadet whipping out his saber and swinging it at Nebraska fans trying to storm the field. That was the closest I ever saw to like an actual like murder happening during a football game. So that one ranks for chaotic.
The Husker players like Darren Diedrich like got in and stepped in. There were like 20 just drunk Husker fans that hopped the fence and got on the field at Kyle Field because Nebraska made this monumental fourth quarter comeback.
17 points.
David Horn ran wild.
Jamal Lord. I mean, they ran on a Texas A&M defense that no one had ran at all. It was a big moment in Frank's 0-2 year.
David Horn's career. Mm-hmm.
And so these fans wanted to get on the field and celebrate. And the field is a sacred military ground, like a burial ground. So the cadets there guard this thing like, I mean,
they were willing to take lives in order to protect that field.
Yeah, too bad camera phones didn't exist back then.
Hey, what was the game where Carl Pellini knocked a cameraman's?
That would have been the 2010 game.
2010 game.
Yeah.
Okay, that was at Texas A&M.
Yeah,
as well.
Just the photographer was
that game.
That was wild too.
That was a chaotic game.
Yeah, because how many penalties were called on Nebraska?
18?
Like 18?
And they brought
Bo about, handled that really well.
They
too.
Brought about 6,000 or 8,000. They brought 6,000 or 8,000 extra
very
seats
calm.
On the field, if you remember.
The Pelinis handled that night very well.
No, they wanted that game so bad. They brought extra seats on the field. If you remember, there were people like all around. Like you couldn't, I mean, it was wild.
It was wild, and then Carl knocked some guy's camera.
Well, then they got mad at your former colleague who wrote, you guys covered it in the newspaper, as you should, and Pliny's weren't mad that you wrote, they were pretty mad that you wrote about it.
Yeah, I don't remember all of that, but I kind of, it's...
Well, he called Sage.
Did he call Sage?
Yeah, they were not happy. That was the night that did Bo in. Was it for Bo. That was the kiss of death to Bo, that A&M game.
2010.
That was when Harvey Perlman called Eric Olson from the AP, and the AP wrote the national story where Harvey was not happy with
Bo's. I think Bo had to apologize.
And that was it. I mean, I think at that moment.
2010.
Like, got in the Big Ten, and then by 2011, by 2012, I-Course was here.
That's fair.
Chaos.
That was so
we
kind of
went Mayhem Monday on this one.
Kind of like that.
All right. Well, Abby,
glad you're
back from Chicago.
Yeah, welcome
happy
back.
To be back. Thanks.
Let's close the show. We'll talk Big Ten football next. You're listening to the Husker Online Show.
This is Husker Online, your authority on Nebraska athletics.
Final segment of the Husker Online Show. Sean Callahan, Steve Sipple, Robin Washett. This segment of the show brought to you by Huel. And look, I was in my car all week last week. I had to go to Fremont, Omaha, Grand Island. Didn't have time to eat breakfast, eat lunch. Huel bailed me out. Like, you know, you get everything you need in one bottle. You get 27 or you get 40 grams of protein in the powder mix, but in the bottle mix, 35 grams, 7 grams of fiber, all for under $5. And it comes in so many great flavors as well. And again, it gives you everything you need, particularly that protein, and you're going to feel a lot better just getting that in you. And it kind of keeps you straight with your diet. You're not going to drive through a fast food restaurant.
God, yes. You're good point.
So it gives you all the good stuff that you need, and it tastes great. And we got a limited time offer. Make healthy eating simple. Go to Huel today with our exclusive offer of 15% off online with our code Husker at Huel.com/Husker. That's Huel.com/Husker. That's new customers only. Thank you to Huel for partnering and supporting our show. Again, that's Huel.com/Husker to take advantage of our exclusive offer of 15% off. All right, let's get into the games. I want to get through what we learned in week one first. Some good matchups. Washington beats Washington State, an ugly win. The Huskies won by 14, 24 to 10. Had a lot of opportunities that they weren't able to capitalize on. So I know Jed Fish was not happy there. You had Notre Dame handle Wisconsin 41 to 13 in Lambeau Field. That was a game at halftime. It was a 13 to 10, yeah. And then the Irish pulled away. Indiana 52-16 win over North Texas. We'll talk more about that. Ohio State blew out Ball State 56-3. How about Oregon? They got everything they wanted from Boise, 34-27. And some of that's not surprising because Boise has done this in the past. They play you tough. That's a very difficult week one game. Penn State, 45-0 win over Marshall. Iowa won 40-0 as Hank Brown got the start at quarterback for the Hawkeyes. Michigan with the controversial 13-12 win, and now the MAC has fired back on that about the second being added to the clock, which allowed Bryce Underwood's Hail Mary pass to happen. Maryland won big. Northwestern beat South Dakota State. UCLA got a great road win at Cal, 45-24.
Big,
which
big.
Was a good win for starting off a new coaching regime there. Purdue wins 44-19. Michigan State was a 30-20 winner. USC 39-0 over Fresno State. UMass knocked off Rutgers. That was a huge upset in college football for week one. Minnesota 59-7 winner. Illinois 42-23 over UAB. So that's your league rundown. I mean, there's a lot of areas we can go with, guys, but I think we got to start with that Michigan-Western Michigan game.
A little uncomfortable. A lot of people are going to be turned off by that whole conversation. It's not getting any better with the MAC coming out today. And after initially rolling over, now they've kind of bit back and said, we dispute what happened. There's not much they can do, though. What was interesting was Mike Pereira, who's, you know, a former official who goes on TV and judges these things, told Joel Klatt that officials are instructed to use the TV clock, not this alternative clock that I'm sure you guys didn't even know about, nor did I.
Nobody knew about it.
Yeah, nobody knew there was a...
With tenths of a second on it, by the way, which we never have seen a clock at a football game that had tenths, because I didn't think that was allowed at football.
Pereira saying that was an eye-opener, that officials are instructed to use the TV clock because of what's going on. Because if you don't, there'll be conspiracy theorists that take over the conversation, which is what's happening. And rightfully so, by the way.
I'm curious, just like, all right, in a hypothetical situation, what if this win saves a 10-win season for Michigan?
And they get in the playoff.
And all of a sudden, you're right there in the thick of the playoff conversation. Are they viewed as a 10-win team? Or do the people on the committee that watch that game and have, I'm sure, some of the same feelings that most of us have, say, no, you didn't win that game. And even if you did win it, like, you needed all that help to beat Western Michigan at home.
Keep in mind, on the final drive, Michigan roughed the punter.
Yep.
So it was in the officiating expert for NBC goes, wow, what a blown call. I mean, literally, it wasn't a running into the kicker. It was a roughing. And then you had
a couple holding calls.
Yeah. On Michigan, Western Michigan's pass rush, not called. I mean, so they got three breaks where if one of those two or three calls gets made, game over. So, yeah, they got it. But guys, it could be a moot point after this week anyway. Michigan hosts Oklahoma.
Right. What will that look like?
And but if Michigan somehow rebounds and looks good and right. beats Oklahoma, what's
confusing.
The
mm-hmm. It'll be confusing because Michigan's got a big – this is too much of a Michigan conversation. The team Nebraska doesn't even play. But they got a quarterback problem. Underwood didn't – I'm not even going to say didn't look good. He looked bad. Mm-hmm. And that's the conversation. It's odd. Like, Sean, you always talk about the money. They're paying him a ton of money. Okay, now what? You're going to see their backup pretty soon, is my guess. Pretty soon, which is C.J. Carr's brother. Mm-hmm.
It reminds me of when we were out at Michigan years ago when Nebraska won and Devin Gardner was the quarterback and how bad he looked. And the crowd just – I mean, Randy Gregory was just running, chasing around everywhere that day. And the whole stadium booed. I mean, that will happen there. The Michigan crowd will boo their team.
Mm-hmm. The other big takeaway for me on this weekend was – how the results sort of make you feel better about Nebraska's
exactly
schedule.
Exactly what I was going to say.
Rutgers going down. Mm-hmm.
Michigan State, Illinois looked
a lot of flawed teams.
Washington
right now.
Didn't look.
Right.
Now, I watched Damon Williams run. Ooh.
Oh, yeah. They better get that their rush lane integrity shaped up, Nebraska, before Damon Williams comes to town on Halloween. But I watched Toledo, Michigan State. I just feel better about that game after Toledo led. Toledo led 20-19 in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. Now, Michigan State came back right away and scored, but Toledo, bottom line is Toledo was ahead in the fourth quarter of that game.
All right, other games. Rutgers has a must-win kind of Friday night game at Boston College. If they start out 0-2, look out.
Oh, their schedule's really tough.
How Indiana will host the powerhouse of Howard. 55.5-point spread.
Might be low.
55.5. I wouldn't touch it.
Michigan, as I mentioned, 5.5-point home dog to Oklahoma. Oregon will go on the road to Oklahoma State, who's coming off a loss to Tulsa.
Oregon going to Stillwater, those kind
and
of
that's numbers. An 11 a.m. game in Stillwater, so you wonder what that crowd will be like.
Yeah. Probably not great. A lot of Oregon fans.
Penn State will play Temple in Philly. So that 23.5-point spread. Wake Forest, Purdue is an interesting one.
Yep.
Purdue's a 3-point dog on the road or at home, excuse me, in Ross-Ade Stadium. Duke, Illinois. We got to watch that one. Illinois and now a 6-point favorite against Duke.
Okay.
And that game is in Champaign. Eastern Michigan will be at Michigan State. That's a 17-point spread in favor of the Spartans. Maryland's at UConn as a 12.5-point favorite in that game. This is a big one, though. Mississippi State, Minnesota on CBS. It's in Minneapolis. Minnesota's a 1-point home dog, so pretty much a pick'em game. But kind of that battle within the battle when you talk about depth of conference, mm-hmm. this is one of those measurement games.
Mm-hmm. It is. Mm-hmm. There's no excuses. Everybody's playing. You can't play the who's playing card. It's early in the season. Oh, yeah, it's big. It's a big one.
Well, because everyone's like, oh, the SEC depth is so much better. But right. what if like a middle tier Big Ten team beats a middle-tier SEC team?
The question is Mississippi State a middle-tier Big SEC
or lower.
Team? Yeah, they're probably lower. Minnesota's lower to middle.
Utah State's at Washington. Bowling Green, obviously, Nebraska. San Diego State is at UCLA in the Rose Bowl. 11.5-point spread. Western Michigan or Western Illinois will be in Madison. Iowa State is at Iowa. That's a 14-point spread. I would not be surprised at all if Iowa won by more than 14 yeah. points.
The big one to watch.
And we buried the lead here. Ohio State, Texas on ABC.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Thank you.
6:30 at night, head-to-head with our game, by the way. But Texas is a 1.5-point favorite at home.
Monster. Joel Klatt, I keep referencing, he has Ohio State 1 and Texas 2. So let's see what that looks like.
Then Louisiana at USC, where the Trojans are a huge favorite in that game to get to 3-0.
I got my eye on Chesney. I mean, Bob Chesney, you mentioned UCLA's change of regime. That's Bob Chesney. They go to Berkeley and win that big? UCLA? So what you wonder is, okay, another James Madison coach. Is he going to do this? Is there going to be another big turnaround in year one at a place? I mean,
what's in the water there?
I know. It's not, you know, it's just one game, but that definitely gets your attention what they did to Cal.
Yeah, I mean, Ohio State Texas is obviously the ticket, but I am going to be fascinated in Oklahoma Michigan. Like I just
oh God yes,
there's going to be a lot of Sooner fans around the country that want to see see the incident get corrected this week in Michigan, get the loss that they probably should have had last week.
Yeah, could Oklahoma just bury Michigan?
I could see
season?
It happening. Polymarket gives Oklahoma 68% advantage. I don't know.
I think Michigan, they must have fallen out of the AP poll.
Oh.
They're not ranked.
Yeah.
They did. So it's kind of it's Michigan versus the world. I mean, you get the sense, like, just all the things that have happened there with Sharon Moore, Harbaugh, Connor Stallions.
I mean, controversy's just become part of the institution, it seems like.
And so it's kind of like Michigan versus the world where, I mean, the AP took them out of the poll.
Took them out. After a win.
Yeah. Make sure you emphasize those air quotes.
Yeah.
Well, guys, it should be a great weekend.
Fascinating.
We will be back. So we're at 6 o'clock is our game. Husker Online post-game live. Hopefully we'll be on between 11 and 11:30.
Shoot for 11.
Is the goal.
Let's be done writing by halftime. How about that?
Yeah.
Let's get,
get your computer out.
We pretty much know most people want to watch our show more than read, like, one of the morning content.
Yeah. So right during the game.
We'll get her done, and we'll get on as early as we can, we promise. But
as long as Nebraska does their job, we'll be done by midway through third quarter.
Have that computer going.
For Abby Barmore, Steve Sipple, Robin Washett, I'm Sean Callahan. We'll be back with Husker Online post-game live following Nebraska Bowling Green.
Thanks again for joining us this week on Husker Online, your authority on Nebraska athletics.